Hello again. It's been a couple of weeks, hasn't it, since FPL launched? I think gradually everyone's awakening and getting excited. I'm seeing more and more people as the days and weeks go on saying they're opening the app, they're sorting their teams out, and they're watching pre-season. So we're going to run through our drafts very shortly. I promise you mine is a lot better. I'm going to start this pod with an apology because I was not in a fit state to pod last time. But everyone's feeling a lot better now, including Jules, because if you're watching this on YouTube, a reminder, we are on YouTube. As you will see, he's sunning himself, aren't you, Jules?
Hello, Kels. Hello, everyone. It's just holiday time, you know. So FPL and holidays on the beach is perfect.
It is holiday time, and I was on holiday last week, and I kept seeing one man, John from Halifax, shout out. Kept seeing him at the breakfast buffet, at the kids' disco, and we had a lot of FPL chat. And he's loyal because he said that he went on the day and tried to get a low team ID. He's a proper player. Anyway, Sam, how are you? All good?
Yeah, I enjoyed trying to get a low team ID. That was fun. But yeah, I've not been on my holidays yet. You two are making me jealous. So got a couple of weeks till mine.
Your time will come.
Yeah, I've got to get game week one out of the way first. Then I can have a holiday.
Whereas Jules and I have to squeeze it in before the season starts. Although, weirdly, all the pre-season interviews have already started this week. There really has been no break this summer. But that's the way we like it, of course. Jules, have you been keeping an eye on pre-season while you've been out there, though?
Yes, I have, Kels, and we'll focus on the big clubs for now. We can do maybe a bit more next week, but some of them have already played. Some are playing tonight, their second game, or over the weekend. But if we start with Arsenal, the champions, obviously, their first preseason game against Girona was won 4-1. I think it was a really good display. Max Damon was excellent, scored a goal, played on that right-hand side. Kai Havertz also scores. We saw a goal for Solis on his kind of debut, if you want, certainly on a friendly game. Gabriel Jesus also scored. We saw a Mosquera, Hincapié partnership at centre-back. So there was a lot of interesting things if you want to invest in Arsenal. Calafiori at left-back, for example, as well. They played tonight, so on Wednesday night against Betis in Dublin. So something to keep an eye on. For example, Manchester City drew with Inter 1-1. Divan Mubama scored. So a few of the youngsters at the club, I thought, did really well. Mubama being one, Ryan McAdoo being the other one, who's only 18 years old. Might have a cameo role to play this season for Enzo Maresca or not. We saw Phil Foden as the number 10. Semenyo with an assist. There was still no Doku, for example, in some of the World Cup players that they have. They play tonight, so again on Wednesday night, against the All-Stars from the Korean League. Manchester United beat Atletico Madrid 2-1. Two goals for Mbeumo, who plays at a number 9. So if you're thinking about a United asset, Brian Mbeumo as a number 9 was very, very efficient in that game. Shaw at left-back, Yoro at right-back, for example, too. Chelsea lost 2-1 to Sam's beloved Spurs, last-minute winner from Richarlison. We were wondering if Xabi Alonso would play with a back five or back four. He played with a back four in that game with Hato at left back, for example, and Palestra, the young Italian player that they signed in the summer, at right back. Estevao scored for them. And as I mentioned, Richarlison scored the winner, like Tonali, in that game in a 4-3-3 formation for Spurs and De Zerbi. João Pedro was really good again, by the way, for Chelsea. And then finally, Liverpool lost 4-2 against Leeds in the US on their preseason. They went 2-1 up and then collapsed completely in the last 20 minutes or so and conceded 3 goals. Wirtz playing as a 10, scoring a goal. Rio and Gomua was on the left wing, which was really good. Isak played at the number 9, not so good. So I think there's a lot of pondering for Iraola to do with Liverpool.
Very impressive. Considering you're on holiday, you've managed to keep across a lot of it there. That's where I've got a cough, which isn't going to help this pod, but I guess there's a lot of escaping from the kids and using it as an excuse to go and 100%. Watch football.
Yeah. And the rest of the family, not just the kids.
We know you too well. We know you too well. Transfers as well, Sam. I think we touched upon a few of them on the last pod because some of them had happened. I know we spoke about Morgan Rodgers going to Chelsea, for example. But of course, it's the busy time of year, isn't it? Have any caught your eye in terms of could be of interest in FPL?
Yeah, there's been a few that have happened. So if you remember back in my first draft, I had Kyle Rushworth in my team. He's now made that move back to Coventry. So that makes for another interesting goalkeeper choice if you want to go there, and rotates nicely with Spurs, as I think I mentioned last time out. We've got Mamadou Sangare now at Brentford. He could be a really exciting prospect for us in FPL. He could be the kind of next Elliot Anderson, if you like. So we've got to keep an eye on him in pre-season, because what we might see is a number of DEFCON being racked up there. And if we've got a cheap enabler in our teams like like that, then again, that will make budgeting for the rest of the team so much easier. Maxence Lacroix made the move from Crystal Palace to Chelsea. Again, that could be a really nice option for us. He has been pretty consistent over the last couple of seasons at Crystal Palace, not so much in the attacking threat stuff. He's had a goal and two assists and 11 clean sheets in the last two seasons. So he's pretty consistent, but it's the DEFCON threat again with him that makes him really interesting. And in that Chelsea team, he could do really well. Those are the kind of three main ones, I think, for me, that offer some real interest. And Valentin Barco is back. So those of you that remember, a few years ago, we all had him in our drafts, and then he disappeared off before he'd even played in game week one, which was very frustrating. But he's back and could be of interest. We'll have to see how that goes over the next couple of weeks.
Any others you want to add to that, Jules, that have caught your eye?
Yeah, Gonzalo Garcia from Real Madrid to Fulham, I think is an interesting one. He's not in the game just yet, so we don't know the price, the pricing and the value, but he was very efficient when he played, and he didn't play that much for Real Madrid, including at the Club World Cup, for the people who remember that a year ago. And I think it could be very interesting because I think he will start for Fulham. So depending on the pricing, as a third forward, that I think in an Arbeloa team who knows him really well, and I think we play on his strength, he's a great finisher, right foot, left foot header, this kind of number nine, really, if you see what I mean. I completely agree with Sam on Sangare at Brentford, who we saw a lot in France, obviously, because he was playing in France last season, who is a DEFCON monster, and I think will have a huge impact on this Brentford team and will do really well. And he's priced at 5.5 million, so I think it's a really decent price for what he can bring to this team. And then the other one I would mention is Danny Welbeck, who, you know, went to Chelsea. And we don't know if he will have the same season as the last one at Brighton, certainly even the same game time. But I think, again, he's a very interesting player to look at if he starts getting game time. And if, for example, he plays up front and João Pedro finds himself in another position with Rodgers and Palmer, then you will have a lot of options to pick from depending on your budget and where you want to spend your money from the Chelsea attack.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people when that transfer went through kind of saying, oh, is that going to affect João Pedro? So, yeah, that's something else to think about, I guess. So yeah, let's get to the good bit then, guys. Well, that's what I think is the good bit anyway. Team updates, draft updates. I won't ask what draft number we're on because I think we're all on about 487, I'm sure. I've certainly got a lot more into it and my draft looks a lot more, I mean, it's still a bit imbalanced, but it certainly looks a bit more, like if I had to start the season with it, I wouldn't be quite as scared as I would have the other week. Sam, do you want to run through yours first?
Yep. So same two goalkeeper combination, Kinski and Rushworth. I haven't moved off of that in any of the drafts, so I suspect that's probably where I'll end up. I think so. Yeah, the fact that I'm on about draft 855 and I haven't changed them at all probably means that that's likely to stick now. A backline that currently has Mosquera, Gvardiol, Mitchell, Van Heck, and then Thomas. I might still shave 0.5 off of that by having Diop instead of Mitchell, because that would enable me to upgrade elsewhere. But we'll see about that. Midfield.
No, Gabriel. You've got rid of Gabriel.
Yeah. No, Gabriel.
Sorry, but I got so much stick on the last pod. And you said, I remember your words have echoed around my head. Oh, you're going to get the fear, Kelly, and you're going to bring in Gabriel. Not once have I brought in Gabriel and I've stayed with it. Now you've come over to the dark side.
Or the light side, yeah, whichever way you look at it. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think when you first build it, I love the idea of having Gabriel in there. And obviously, when it comes to picking an Arsenal defender, picking Gabriel is the obvious choice. But at 8 million, and when we're talking about an extra 2.5 million of budget, it's quite hard, and it's very tempting not to just move that budget elsewhere because it does significantly upgrade what you can do in the midfield and across that forward line. So yeah, that's where I am at the minute. We've got a lot of preseason to play out. And as Jules mentioned at the beginning, we've got, you know, other competitions where we can see what Arsenal are up to. So I will keep my eyes on that Arsenal defence, but I am really tempted to save a little bit of money there.
Okay, we've done your keepers and defence. Let's do Jules's keepers and defence. Go on, Jules.
Yeah, so I've changed mine. Remember, I had Donnarumma in and I went for Verbruggen and Kinski because we saw Kinski already playing. I think he's guaranteed to be the number one at Spurs. I think Spurs will concede goals because of the way they will play, and that's a De Zerbi team and that's fine. But I think he will also be very good, will make a lot of saves. And I think Verbruggen is a similar one, but for the two of them at 4.5 million, I think you take that really. So I've got them two now and try to rotate them and you know, pick the right one each week. I've dropped Gabrielle as well from my defense.
Oh my gosh. This is an
because you're the voice of wisdom, Kels. You're the voice of wisdom and
all
you were
the
one right.
It's taken you this long, but you've started to listen to me.
Only because, and we'll get to the structure of all our teams and what you do with premiums and stuff a bit later on. But I think if you want, let's say, you know, Bruno and Rodgers and Haaland, I think just Gabriel doesn't fit in. If you want Bruno, Saka and Haaland, for example, there's no room for Gabriel. Or if you want to go there, then the rest of the players is us three and some rubbish enablers, really. So I think it's very difficult to fit Gabriel in your team if you already want Saka, Bruno and Haaland there. So it's whatever you prefer in terms of premiums. But I think with Mosquera, it looks like he will start the season certainly. And we don't know yet when Gabriel is going to come back. Will he play on the Community Shield? Will he play the first game of the season then? After that, because he hasn't come back to training just yet. So let's wait. And then if something happened with Gabriel, if he starts the season really well, we should play our wild card quite soon anyway. I think in that first half of the season, around that long international break, maybe.
Yeah, I agree.
So then there's time to change anyway. But so I'll have Mosquera now instead of Gabriel, if you want, for the Arsenal defense. That enables me to bring Gay in because I lost Donnarumma, so I still have a City defender, a bit like what Sam did with Guardiola. I've got Konsa because I still think a 4.5 million Konsa is a must-have because he's such a great value for money. And then the other two are Diop at 4 million and Van Hewijk from Coventry at 4 million as well.
Okay, interesting. Just a word on, I've got Guardiola as well in my defence. I had O'Reilly, I think, on the last pod. Then I did go to Gayhi. Now I've gone down to Guardiola, mainly because of the comments, and it sounds like he's going to be quite central to what Maresca is going to be doing there. I think he mentioned Haaland, Foden, Guardiola, didn't he? And we know that Guardiola's got goal threat and the like. He's a little bit cheaper than Gayhi. Were you not tempted to go there, Jules? Why are you spending more on Gayhi? Just interesting.
No, I did. I did. It's just I thought Gayhi was superb last season, and I know he's at 6 million now, which is obviously more than what we used to see him at Palace. And I really hesitated between the two, to be fair. And I went for Gayhi because I had enough money and because I still thought that if there's a bit of rotation, despite what Maresca said, and despite Guardiola being left-footed, which he really likes having a left-footed there, I just thought that Gayhi might be more locked in. But to be fair, one or the other, as long as I think you need a City defender. Whoever you choose, O'Reilly, I think, is the second most owned defender now with 22% of the managers having him, just behind Gabriel with 25%, but ahead of Gehi, Gvardiol, Virgil, you know, anybody else. So clearly a lot of the managers are going for O'Reilly. But yeah, I think with O'Reilly, I'm not too sure exactly where he will play and everything like that. But between Gvardiol and Gehi, I think he's really what you prefer between the two.
I think, Sam, you were nodding along with me with those comments when you heard about Guardiola potentially being central, with the fact that O'Reilly's been at the World Cup as well, and we don't quite know where he's paid. At the moment, at 5.5 million, for me, he just feels incredibly great value. I mean, I had Kerkez, and then maybe it was something to do with the fact that they shipped all those goals against Leeds. I don't know, but I just felt like Jules said, like, 5.5 million City defender who we're getting all the right noises from, watching be dropped in game week one now. Just feels like a bit of a gift to us. So I've got Mosquera, Guardiola. I've also got Konsa as well, Jules, because I was really surprised when I saw him priced at 4.5 million. And I love it when there's a cheap England player. And I've also gone for Luke Shaw as well. I've had Harry Maguire in a lot of my drafts. And then actually Luke Shaw's that little bit cheaper. I don't know if I'll definitely stick with him. I worry about the injuries, of course, but United's fixtures are good. I'll keep an eye on pre-season, but just thought of 4.5 million. He was good value. And then Thomas as well. He'll probably spend quite a lot of time on my bench, particularly at the start of the season, but you never know. We're always looking for those cheap, newly promoted players, aren't we? Oh, my goalkeepers are currently Kinski, because it feels like everyone in the world is going to start with him.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But at that price point for a Spurs starting goalkeeper, 4.5 million, we're being told that Spurs are going to be great. So let's see. Let's watch how long that lasts.
Some beliefs for sure.
Yeah, maybe I'm just being influenced because it's not very often I start the season with a Spurs player. I've got Dubravka as my backup at the moment, but that's just because he's cheap and I haven't really... I'm going to see
the double
how much...
Spurs goalkeepers.
Yeah, but if I don't really like rotating goalkeepers. I don't like that headache. But it does make me a little bit uneasy. So I'll see if I can find 5.5 later on when I'm toying with my drafts, then I'd go to another 4.5 starting keeper, I think. Into midfield, go on, Jules, you go first this time.
Okay, so I've got with Bruno Fernandes, and I think for me, and again, we'll talk about this.
Hold on, you didn't have him before either, did you?
No, I had Saka in, and I think it's, for me, it's a straight pick between one of the other. So I've got a draft with both of them, Saka and Bruno, and to be fair, that squad is decent.
I've got both.
I think, yeah, you have both. I think you can build with both and Haaland, obviously, and have that's your three premiums, and have a really good team. But obviously, if you go for one or the other, so Saka or Bruno with Haaland, then you've got more options. You've got more money to spend, especially if you go with Saka instead of Bruno. So, but I went for Bruno because United's first two fixtures, especially, and I think he's guaranteed to play with Michael Carrick, obviously very good. I kept Rodgers in simply because he's cheaper than Cole Palmer. And I still think Rodgers is a really good signing for Xabi Alonso, even if he's still currently on holidays and we haven't seen him yet, just yet playing because of what happened, you know, because he went so far at the World Cup. Iliman Ndiaye, 6 million with Everton. I think he had a good season last year and will be very good again this season.
You worried Enzo about the transfer rumours, Jules?
Yeah, maybe, but then we'll cross that bridge when that happens, if it happens. And to be fair, Iliman Ndiaye are a bigger club, let's say, or certainly a stronger team than Everton right now, would be very interesting to see. I put Solis in because I think he's going to start on the left-hand side for Arsenal in the season. And again, I like what I saw from him in that Girona game on pre-season. So let's see what he does against Betis on Wednesday night. And then Enzo Lefebvre is my fifth one because I think he's going to bring a lot of DEFCON. He's going to be on penalties very likely again, on set pieces. And I'm not sure if Sunderland will be as good as they were last season, especially by playing in Europe too at the same time. But I think if there's one player that you could believe in terms of consistency and talent, is definitely Enzo. So I've gone for him.
Yeah, he's on my watch list as well. Sam, who have you gone for in the field?
So Bruno and Dominic Szoboszlai remain from my original draft. I fully bought into the Maresca comments. And so Phil Foden is now making an appearance in my draft.
Is he 7 million?
He's 7 million, yeah. And I think it's 7 million for an extra City attacking player. It just feels really nice. So I've gone with him for now. And then Danny Welbeck leaving Brighton means that I'm expecting Pascal Gross to have more set piece responsibility. So, and I did love owning Pascal Gross at the back end of last season. He was the one that went a long way in turning my season around, if you remember. So Pascal Gross is there. I've currently, with this draft, got 1 million in the bank. So I've still got Matt Grimes from Coventry in there in my fifth midfielder slot, but he might very well get an upgrade to a 6 million midfielder. But then it depends on where I go with my chips and how much I think I might want to play my Coventry players in game week two, as to whether I keep him and then change it up on wildcard, because I do really like Sangare. So I might move from Grimes to Sangare and go with him instead.
Okay, we've got a lot of similarities because I've also gone Pascal Gross. I'm sorry, but for 5.5 million, a set piece taker, as soon as Welbeck went, I was just like, it's great because it's enabled me still to have Fernandes, Szoboszlai and Saka. I'm still not 100% and I will wait and see when Saka comes back. The noises, that one could go down to the wire, to be honest, because if I don't think he's going to start, then I'm not going to waste all that money on him. But at the moment, actually, Danny Welbeck moving has enabled me to keep Saka, incidentally. So that's my starting four midfield. And then I've got Slater from Hull on the bench as my 4.5 million. But that's obviously the compromise that you have to make when you spend so much money on those players. So yeah, not dead set. I think I'm interested actually about the positioning of Szoboszlai.
Yeah.
Because it looks like Verts is a little bit more expensive, but it looks like Verts is going to play in that 10, doesn't it? And actually, that worries me a little bit. And I'm wondering if we're all going to regret not going that way, Sam?
Yeah, maybe. He's 0.5 more, Verts.
But, I know.
It's not the end of the world. It's only 0.5. What's interesting is that we're seeing them both doing different things. So there's going to have different routes to points, right? Verts looks like he's going to play in that 10 off of Isak. So you would expect probably more goals out of him. Dominic Szoboszlai has set piece, a lot of set piece responsibility. You'd expect some, you know, assists from corners, that kind of thing. I'd also expect, if he's in the eight, him to pick up the defensive contribution points and support the defence as well. So I actually think that they might be relatively level over the course of the season when you play out the extra points that I think Szoboszlai might pick up versus what Wirtz might do. That is another thing I may do with that extra money that I have in the bank. So I think what we saw against Leeds, at least in the first sort of half of the game, was they both looked quite good. So let's see what the rest of the preseason pans out and what it looks like for Liverpool. But there is definitely a case for moving for Szoboszlai to Wirtz. But then we all started last season with Wirtz and it didn't end so well for us. So whereas Szoboszlai was consistent over the course of the season, consistently really, really good, and obviously had the summer off. So one to watch, I think, between those two.
I feel like Wirtz is a bit more of an Iraola player, but I could be wrong. Where do you stand on that, George?
Yeah. No, I agree. I bet Szoboszlai is already owned by almost 50% of the manager. So again, I think he's on 48 or something, or just below. If he does well, especially in the first couple of games in the season, the first two game weeks, and you don't have him and half of the game, you know, apart from you, has him, then that's going to hurt you massively. So that's something to keep in mind. I mean, Rodgers is quite heavily owned too, and he's 0.5 more expensive. But we've seen Szoboszlai play already. Like Sam said, he had the summer off. He's ready. He will be ready to go. Rodgers, we don't know yet. Xabi Alonso might consider that he's not ready to play before the start of September, for all we know. So that's also to keep something in mind. Wirtz went to the World Cup, but obviously was home much earlier than Rodgers, for example, or other players in the game. So it's it depends. I think Wirtz, I think a lot of what Iraola is going to do will be built around Wirtz and Isak, and rightly so, certainly with the ball. But Szoboszlai, who can also play a right back, Frimpong picked up a small injury again in the game against Leeds that we mentioned earlier. And really, there's no other right back right now, or good enough, certainly, or better than even Szoboszlai playing there. So we might have some games where Szoboszlai maybe deputize again at right back, like he did last season. But if he plays in midfield, at 7 million is a really good investment.
Okay, then moving on to forwards. I think these could be quite similar. Sam?
Haaland, João Pedro. I'm currently on Igor Jesus.
Oh, so was I. And I changed a couple of days ago. Interesting.
I've been backwards and forwards on that position, because I've had Solanke in there for a little while. I've had Igor Jesus in there for a little while. I've had Ollie McBurnie in there for a little while. I just kind of can't decide on that third forward slot whether I want to spend six. I've had Mateta in there as well, whether I want to pay 6.5, 6 or 5.5. And I think it depends on where I settle in terms of that Grimes position in midfield, because if I decide I want a 6.5 or slightly more as my fourth midfielder and have Pascal Gross as my fifth, then I need to find a bit of budget. But Igor Jesus has been in fantastic form in pre-season. I think it's 4-4 now for him. So really, really good. And what we're seeing with Solanke is he starts the games, but as Jules mentioned at the beginning when he was talking about the friendly against Chelsea, it's Richarlison that comes on and scores the winning goal. So, I mean, it was very lucky and, you know, all of that jazz. But nonetheless, he is the one that's in form in pre-season. So it's quite tough to pick there. And I don't know, Igor Jesus just feels like the one to pick right now. So I'm tempted to start with him as things stand.
Yeah, I was on him until the other day. I'm on Haaland, Pedro and Calvert-Lewin at the moment, because he's also been scoring for fun. And I really like Leeds' early fixtures, though every time I own Dominic Calvert-Lewin, it ends in a world of pain. So I'm not totally sold on that, but it looks quite nice in my team at the moment. So it is him. But as I said, I had Igor Jesus as well. Jules, what are you on your front three?
So Haaland and João Pedro, I think, like pretty much the whole world. My third one is Brian Brobbey, because, again, it's what he brings to the Sunderland team.
Double Sunderland attack.
Well, I'm not sure if Lefe is a Sunderland attacker, really, in that sense. But again, I'm not too convinced by the fact that they will have another great season. We said that they would play in Europe too, which I think is going to pump a lot of their energy anyway. So we'll have to see. I just like Broby's strength, and I think the momentum from not just last season, or certainly the end of last season, but also him going to the World Cup and doing quite well for a disappointing Dutch team in the end. But still, I think that would have bring him a lot of confidence and to keep that kind of form into the start of the season. So That was the thinking about him. There's Dominic Calvert-Lewin as well in one of the drafts. The thing about Igor Jesus is, and I think Glasner is going to play with the front two at Forest, and Forest have, I think, Liverpool game week two and Spurs game week three, something like that, which is quite tough. So I was not sure about him, despite him scoring against North County and another rubbish team, I think, in his second preseason game. I see where you're coming from, both of you, but I'm just not too convinced yet by Igor Jesus. And also the front two, I think, goals will be shared, whether it's Wood that plays with him up front, whether it's, I don't know, even my boy Kalim Wendo, who I don't think will stay, but still. I think a lone striker, obviously like a João Pedro type or a Haaland type or, you know, whoever Arsenal play up front or Isak, that kind of guys, will be very different if you have a front two like Forest will have.
I don't know. When I look at Forest, I think of, like, I want a Morgan Gibbs-White or someone like that. So that's kind of also why I got rid. It's hard, isn't it? Because we can so get lured into stuff in pre-season, but it is only pre-season. But it's kind of all we've got to go off at the moment. Yeah. So
I think you have to watch ownership on that third one, because you don't want to go with somebody too highly owned in that third slot in some ways, in case it goes wrong and they don't start the season, because they'll be the ones that people jump off quickly. So that's kind of where I always am thinking with my cheaper options in every position, is I don't want to go for necessarily the most popular of those, because if they don't start well, I could see my team value drop because people will just get off of them straight away. So it's a fine balance, that slot. And I think sort of between the from six and a half right down to 5.5, there are probably 7 or 8 viable options that you could pick in that front line. And it's just working out who the right one is based on what we see in pre-season, and then trying to use the fixtures to kind of give you a head start onto who is the best one.
Basically, it's Haaland, Pedro plus one, isn't it? And it's just aim and hope, it feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it depends on your budget. But there's, for example, a lot of love and ownership for the young kid that Fulham signed from Bayern Munich, Jonah Kusiosare, who is owned by almost 9% of the managers right now. He's on 4.5 million. He's done really well in pre-season. He scored. With Gonzalo Garcia arriving at Fulham and Mooney's still being there, obviously, I think he's probably not going to play a ton of minutes, although he looks very promising. He was a very promising youngster anyway. And Fulham paid quite a lot of money for him too. So you think when you invest that kind of money, even on a young player, it's also to develop him and play him and things like that.
Yeah.
But clearly a lot of the managers think that that third spot at 4.5 is good for him. Then you've got more money to invest somewhere else. And even if you have a Haaland, João Pedro front two and a very strong midfield, that's fine if that Fulham kid stays on your bench, for example.
Well, it's fine if you're not planning to play a bench boost early, though, because that's the other thing to consider. Because like Kels was saying, she's got Dubravka, that pretty much rules out a game week one or game week two bench boost, which is fine. I think as long as you go into it with your eyes open, knowing that you can't bench boost, or you probably don't want to bench boost if you've got a risk, then that's okay. But I think that's why deciding on a chip strategy, or at least having a plan for a chip strategy, is quite important right now.
Clearly, you've decided on yours, Sam. Go on.
I'm not planning to play one in game week one or two.
Bench boost thing in game week one and two, Sam? Is this something like, I don't know?
A lot of people
like
are talking about
new.
It's a big thing.
That was never talked about before, no?
It has been a bit because people build a squad, don't they? And it's like, if you've got all these players and you want to play them all, and then once you've got rid of your bench boost, sorry, I interrupted you a bit then, Sam, but for me, it's like once you've got rid of your bench boost, in a way, you can have the cheapest bench ever and not worry about your bench almost.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things to it, Jules. It's like it started being a thing properly last season when we got the second set of chips coming in, because obviously in the first half of the season, you don't get the doubles necessarily. Yeah. So people are looking for an opportunity to look where they play it. The bench boost always feels, in my mind anyway, as the weaker of the chips in terms of the possibilities of extra points that it could bring. Like when you're talking about free hits and triple captains and obviously the wild card, there's so much potential upside that those can bring. For me, an early bench boost this year feels really risky for a number of reasons. One, you have the World Cup players. So if you're going to invest in a player that's been away at the World Cup and played, you know, for a long time, Morgan Rogers is a prime example. We're not exactly sure what Morgan Rogers' minutes might look like in the early parts of the season. So if you want to go into the season with him, it makes that a risky bench boost early on. I think there's other factors at play as well with that. That is, we've got multiple, and actually even since we potted, more new managers in the Premier League. So again, you have a little bit of uncertainty around what those actual starting 11s might look like across those new teams and how they might set up and the formations they might play in. So for me, that's another factor. And the bigger factor for me right now is that if you bench boost in game week one or two, one of the key reasons for doing it, Kels, like you say, is because you can then strip money out of your bench. Mm. So this year, we don't have the Dubravka 4.0 starting goalkeeper, we don't think anyway, that we did last year. So to go down to a 4.0, you're having to go back in with Dubravka, but he's not going to be first choice at Spurs. He'll be the backup. So if you do that and you strip the money out of your defence, that probably means that you are going for a very early wild card. Now, last season, when we had our double chips for the first time, we also got 5 free transfers at Christmas because we had AFCON. So we could build almost a third wild card, like a mini wild card, to help us get through that period. If you wild card in 3 or 4 and you hold your second wild card till closer to doubles and the blank game weeks like we normally like to do, you could feasibly have 20 weeks where you've just got to manage with transfers. And I don't like the idea of that. I like to give myself a little bit more flexibility in terms of how I change out my team. So for me, I'd rather wait, play through the early part of the season, learn a lot about the new managers, learn a lot about the World Cup returners and how they're going to start, learn about the new signings, wild card, maybe for the international break, possibly even push it back a little bit later. Right now, I'm looking at a wildcard 6, bench boost 7 strategy. But that's kind of where I am. And I'll push the free hit and the triple captain right back. Triple captain probably Man City in 16, but we'll see where they are when we get there.
Jules, I think I know the answer to this. You got any chip plans yet?
Absolutely not. The only chips that is the one I eat at the beach. No, but I find this bench boost really interesting because I understand if you build this squad and you've got really good players, and often that's what we do, then why not playing them if you're sure they will all play and start game week one or game week two, for example, and the fixtures are decent. I don't really like the idea of it, but I can understand why people are tempted. Sure, no problem. I think some early triple captain shouts, okay, City at home to Ipswich game week 3 for Erling Haaland, for example, because there won't be a double in the first half of the season. So you will play your triple captain on one game. And very likely we target Haaland and easy fixtures at home at the Etihad for City. So there's that one to keep in mind. If you want Bruno Fernandes, United at home against Ipswich again in game week 2, for example. There's a bit of Chelsea against Hull City at home in game week 4. So there's a few games where if you want a really good early start, let's say you've started game week 1 and 2 really well, then and you're ahead in all your mini leagues and you're doing really well in the big rankings and things like that, and Haaland is on form and Maresca and City are on good form, then why not playing your triple captain as early as then to just get ahead of everybody else, even before the international break, even before you wild card or everything like that. That could be a smart idea, certainly, you know, in my planning.
Yeah, it does just feel like triple captain is perfect for a Haaland at home to a newly promoted team, doesn't it? That's what I always think. But yeah, I haven't got a major chip strategy in terms of, I just know that I don't want to play the bench boost early on. For all the reasons you said, pretty much, Sam. I like to feel things out. I'm not confident enough in my starting 11, let alone my whole squad, to play a chip on it. And I just think there's too much uncertainty as to who's going to play in minutes and returning from a World Cup, personally, for me. Although I do see the merit in just getting rid of it so that you don't have to worry about it as much.
I think the Coventry versus Hull game in game week 2 is also playing into a lot of people's minds because they think, well, there's an opportunity to maybe go very heavy on Coventry and hope that they win that game. But those two games in the Championship last year both finished 0-0. And they will also go into it, both of those teams, thinking, well, we have to beat the fellow newly promoted teams. Exactly.
Well, they can't lose it, can they?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we'll see. But again, that game feels a bit uncertain in the same way that even like last year when the newly promoted played each other, they weren't that always that easy to call. So I'm with you, Kels. I think I'm just going to hold fire and wait a little bit.
Okay. Just looking at our team structure then, we've kind of broadly all gone the same. I feel like we were all quite different on the first pod and we've kind of amalgamated into more similar teams. I mean, I'm still obviously premium heavy. I've got Saka over you two and I've discussed the compromises that I've had to make with that. And whether I'm 100% comfortable, I'm not so sure. Although the likes of Ezri Konsa is on my bench at the moment at 4.5 million, which actually doesn't feel that bad. At one point I had a bench, that was just full of newly promoted players, and that felt really weird. I don't hate my team, but it is compromises. Sam, how many premiums do you think we should be aiming for and kind of enablers? It's important to get the balance, isn't it?
It is. Two feels really comfy. Having Haaland and Bruno is comfortable. You can have a really great squad around those two. Three, I think, is okay if it's not Bruno that's one of them. So if it's Haaland and then a Palmer or a Saka or a Gabriel, and then you go for one of the cheaper Manchester United midfielders instead, the Kunyas, the Mbeumo.
Do you think that's a viable strategy, by the way? Because I've seen a lot of people, and Jules mentioned Mbeumo playing in the nine role in the preseason the other day. That caught my eye.
Yeah, absolutely. And I am one of the things I still haven't yet decided on is whether I'd like to double up on Manchester United's attack for the first 2 weeks of the season. That feels really good. It's just how I do that. If we saw a little bit of Sesko, if we saw him appear and was starting in pre-season, I would be super tempted to go there for game weeks one and two and then move on. But I do think you could, instead of having Bruno, go for Mbeumo and Cunha and double up and cover it out that way. And I think that is a viable strategy. I personally think that with the season Bruno had last year, I'd like to have him and then double up with somebody else. And I'd rather trade Gabriel for a different Arsenal defender and save the budget that way than I would save it by not having Bruno, because I just think his route to points are just too good and he has the penalties and everything else. So it's a risk, I think, going without him. But I think two is really nice. Three, you can do it. It's just you do have some compromises elsewhere.
Jules, where do you stand on the Bruno versus another Man United attacker? Because being honest, actually, if I don't start with Saka, it will probably be going from Saka to Mbeumo, I think, to have the Arsenal United
would be very
double.
Smart. Yeah, I agree. And Sesko was in my first draft of our last show 2 weeks ago, but he's still carrying that small injury. He hasn't played in that Atletico Madrid game. And I think Mbeumo was there maybe because Sesko was not available there, you know, and Mbeumo can play there and might not be there for the whole season in that position. If Sesko is fit and doing well, Mbeumo could well go back onto the wing. And that would be, I think he can be very good there. But I think that's Mbeumo is a great option too. And I agree with Sam in the sense that Bruno is expensive. It's 12 million plus the 15.5 for Haaland already between just the two. If you have them, this is a third of your whole budget. So it can be in a way difficult to look at it and thinking like, really, all that money on just two players, as good as they might be this season. And again, we just don't know. Bruno hasn't played yet with United. He's coming back this week. So we will have to see. But if Bruno is playing, he's fit, he's ready to go straight away. When you've got those two first games for United at Hull City and Ipswich, away and home, it's hard to not have him because I think that could really, really hurt you. If you don't want to go for Bruno, that, like I said earlier, I think is there's such a strong team to have without Bruno and having Saka, Gabriel and Haaland, for example, as your three premiums in the team. That's very, very doable. Far more than having Haaland, Bruno and then trying to find some money somewhere for Saka or Gabriel or Palmer or somebody like that.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting, isn't it? And I think the pricing this season has made it even more interesting because we're all going to have slightly different premiums. I'm seeing, like you though, less and less people going with Gabriel. So all it will take is him to score two on the opening weekend or something stupid like that. And we'll all go, oh my gosh. Because Sam, you always raise the point that it's easier to go, and it's the same with Bruno, isn't it? It's easier to start at that price point and go down than it is to go up and find all of the money. What about differentials then? A quick word on those before we go, because it's something that we go big on this pod. We do differential of the week. We're not going to start that just yet because, of course, the game hasn't actually started. The Premier League matches haven't started. But differentials at this time of year, if you get the right one, you're onto a winner, aren't you, Sam?
You are, but I would also offer a little word of caution with them, because if you remember last season, I decided that I was going to start the season without João Pedro and instead go for a slightly less well-owned forward, and it massively came back to bite me, and I found it really difficult to catch up after that because João Pedro went on and did well. He had a fantastic season, didn't he? But particularly in those early weeks, he was really good. So I think there's something to be said for having differentials, and they are the thing that really moves your season. They can be the game changers for you in terms of climbing mini leagues, in terms of improving overall rank. But I think you also have to have the core spine, and Jules mentioned it a couple of times while we were talking about teams, like the ownership of some players is really high. And so going without them and picking a differential player, like even the Szoboszlai-Wirtz thing at the minute, picking Wirtz over Szoboszlai you're picking a differential over somebody that's very, very popular. So there's a risk factor that comes with that, because if Wurtz goes off, you're winning and you go flying up the mini leagues in your overall rank. But if it's Szoboszlai, you fall behind quite quickly. So I think you have to look at the heavily owned players. You have to think about owning at least a good chunk of them, and then use the kind of peripheral players of your team to have your differentials in there. So have the core, have the Haalands, the Brunos, the João Pedros, the ones that are going to be super popular. And then around that, pick players that can make the difference in terms of moving you up your leagues by picking people that are different from everyone else.
Yeah, it's a good point. You love a differential, don't you, Jules?
Yeah, I'm so good at picking them as well. But no, it's good. Like Sam mentioned Phil Foden, who's, you know, in a team that Mariska has talked about, that played in the 10 in that game against Inter Milan. He's owned by 7% of the managers. If he does well at the start of the season and you have him, and obviously many other managers don't have him, obviously, then that's great for you. If you look at Doku or Pascal Gross, it's the same. If you like a Kai Havertz, Igor Jesus that you two mentioned earlier, they're lowly owned right now. So whatever points those can get, you get ahead of everybody else that don't have them.
Okay, then. That's where we're going to leave it today. But I just wondered if, I'm going to leave on this question, which player, Sam, do you have that you don't currently have, sorry, scares you the most? I'm leaving on a nice upbeat note here.
I don't have any Arsenal players outside of Mosquera. So to be honest, Gabriel and all the Arsenal attackers scare me, because not having an Arsenal attacker just feels all kinds of wrong, particularly when they start the season at home to Coventry. So I probably need to find a way to rectify that.
Yeah, do you know, that's every time I get rid of Saka from my draft, I bring him back because it scares me. But it scares me having him as well because of his injury. Is he going to be eased back into the season? Because he was obviously carrying that injury a bit last season. He played so much. I don't know. Yeah. Jules, what about you?
I think Gabriel is one for sure. And then for the rest, I put Solis in for the same fear that, you know, you two discussed about Arsenal and not having an Arsenal attacker, and I'm not really sure how much Solis is going to play and if he's going to be a very good or not very good or things like that, but I think he's got great potential. Is Cole Palmer probably a risk not having him because he's had a summer off, and I think there's a massive, you could see it coming that Cole Palmer is going to have a great season under Xabi Alonso at Chelsea. So it's players like that, but again, they are so expensive, Saka and Palmer and Gabriel, that it's not just having them or owning them, it's finding a way to get them. And then that could also make your team a bit weaker, as good as they can be individually. The whole collective of your squad is very important too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will leave you on a positive note and give you the FPL Pod mini league code because it has been relaunched. And normally by the end of the season, I know it off by heart, but this is a new one, Q0HV1Q. So do make sure you join. I should have said it earlier in the pod in case people have switched off from our waffle by now. So I'll say it earlier in the pod next week, but that is the league code, Q0HV1Q. Please do join and play against fellow listeners. We'll be back next week to look at each of the positions in more detail. We'll also run through the fixtures as well, because I know we touched upon it during our discussions that certain teams have good fixtures to start with. We'll go through those in more detail so you're up to speed with that. And of course, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of drafts that have changed. Jules, will you still be on holiday?
Yeah, of course, man.
Of course. It's all right for some. Some of us have got about 4 or 5 days work in between them, myself and Sam, I think. I know this is a busy time of the year for Sam. Yeah, so we'll be back next Thursday. The Fantasy TV show is also going to return next Thursday as well. So that will be on the Premier League website and app and on your TV screens too. It's all getting very serious. 2 weeks. Is it 2 weeks to go? It's 2 weeks to go, isn't it?
Less than that. Is it 2 weeks? Yeah.
21st, isn't it? First one.
21st. Right, let's end this podcast like I often do on some terrible maths. Just over 2 weeks to go, guys, until the season starts. So this is where it gets serious, and we'll be with you every step of the way. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.